Welcome to episode 77 of the Transforma tu Inglés Profesional podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Smith. Today, I will be talking with Alistair, an amazing coach from my team, all about why supply and demand determine worth, the concept and idea of surplus, whether going to university is worthwhile, and what to be worthy of something actually means. This podcast helps you push your business English communication skills to the next level so that you can grow professionally and achieve your international career goals. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. Enjoy! Hi everyone, today we're going to be talking about one particular word that we have actually discussed in the past, but we're going to put a new twist on it basically. And that particular word is worth. And in many cases in English, we have to say that something is worth it. And many Spanish speakers leave that it off. And we've covered that previously in another podcast. But today we're actually going to be talking about another variation of that particular word, which is when something is worthy. And as usual, Alistair is here with me. Hi, Alistair.
Hi, good morning, Daniel. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Recovered from the sunburn, as people may remember from previous episode, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's good news.
Keeping out the sun. Yeah. Madrid.
Good. Well, at least you're not sweating like me, because I'm actually in Alicante this week. And I have to tell you, it's completely, the humidity is completely different to Madrid. So there you go.
Heat plus humidity.
That's worst. Right.
Yeah, at least here is dry heat. So
absolutely, absolutely.
It could be worse.
Yes. So let's talk about this word, this new word, which is a slight adaptation, right? Because we did talk about worth, something being worth something or worth it. But then recently we got an email that actually used the word worthy, right? And there was a problem there.
Yeah, you mentioned to me that this person had emailed and they said something like, Daniel, your advice is always worthy. And you had to correct it because worthy is not the word. But why not? This is the question. People say, well, worthy is, you know, something is worth it. No, is good, which we have covered before. But the problem is you've got worthy and worthwhile from the word worth. Now, the question is, do they mean the same? Or do they mean something different? And when do you use them? Well, in this case, worthy would not be the correct word. And we need to, this started, you know, we were thinking, this is something we really need to explain in more detail.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that's what we're going to do. And we're going to do that more towards the end of this episode, right? But we're going to just start off with a whole idea of not necessarily something being worth it, but just the concept behind something being worth something, right? That's the idea. And we're kind of going to a little bit of economic terminology, which I think is really interesting as well, partly because there's also one term in particular that often trips many Spanish speakers up in terms of a particular type of description of something, right? So yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about something being worth something. How does that work, Alistair, in terms of something being worth something in terms of an economic idea?
Well, worth is the value, el valor, you know, what something, the value of something. Now that, so you do an evaluation. So for example, a property. So somebody's house or apartment has a certain value in the market, no? So you say, you could say, oh, my house is worth whatever it may, 200,000 euros. Now, really, it is at that point, it's not really worth anything. It's only worth, finally, what the buyer, what somebody's prepared to pay for it in the market. So, of course, an estate agent or real estate agent, in America, they say real estate.
Yeah,
this is often confused. In Britain, we just say estate agent.
Yeah.
But in or USA, they say real estate. So real estate agent is the person who buys and sells properties. So this person can come to your house and do an evaluation, say, well, I think you should ask X amount for this house because they know the market. They know more or less what similar kinds of properties are being sold for. But it's only an estimation. It's only an evaluation.
Yeah.
So really, you don't know what your house is worth, what the value until somebody buys it. So you can ask. You have the asking price, I think is the expression.
Yeah.
So you ask for a certain amount and then people can come and look at the house and they can make you an offer, which may be less. You know, there's a negotiation will take place. And this all comes to what in economics is really the market price of something. And the market price is determined by the concept of supply and demand.
Yeah.
Supply absolutely. And demand. And we were talking about this before we started recording that Spanish speakers nearly always make a mistake with this.
They do.
Because it's different, slightly different in Spanish, and they just translate it into English incorrectly.
That's right. That's right. And yeah, I mean, in English, we say supply and demand, but of course, the whole mistake really comes from the Spanish where they say oferta y demanda, right?
Yeah.
And then instead of saying supply, they probably would go for offer.
Offer.
That's basically the idea.
I hear that so often talking about offer.
Offer and demand, right?
Yeah, offer and demand. And we don't use the word offer. The word offer exists, obviously, in English.
It does.
To offer to do something for somebody, for example, no? But not in this sense, in the economic sense of the market, no?
That's right.
So you have supply, which is the number of properties in the market that are for sale, I suppose, no?
Yeah.
And then you have the demand, the amount of people who are wanting to buy that particular property in that particular place. And this, you know, creates a price, I suppose. And that's what your house is worth, I suppose, is what you finally sell it for, really, in the end, which is determined by supply and demand, more or less. Maybe it's a bit more complicated than that, but that's basically how it's supposed to work, you know, in a free market economy.
Yeah, exactly. And we were talking actually about different examples. And recently, both of us have been back to the UK and we were kind of talking about the different situations in the UK at the moment in terms of house prices. This has been historic, though. It's not just something that is really something new necessarily. But in the UK, London has always been seen as very much the center of economic activity, right? So, the supply and demand of housing in the UK, for example, is very much, there's a high demand, right? And to a certain degree, limited supply. So that's why, for example, there's the housing in London is relatively expensive, or you could say extremely expensive.
I would say extremely, but I suppose it depends what, it's all relative, depends what you're comparing it to.
Yes, absolutely.
Tokyo, cool. New York, I think it's sort of up there with the most expensive cities in the world.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it is the most expensive, but it certainly must be in the top two or three, I would think.
Yeah. Exactly. So there you have an example of supply and demand, and where the supply is limited and the demand is high, and therefore you have very high prices. And you were talking, Alistair, I think you said that you would never really buy one particular house in London for such a high price.
I can never afford it on a teacher's salary, obviously. But, you know, to me, well, the thing is, when you talk about things being worth something, there's also a subjective element. So often people say, what, 200,000 for that house is not worth it. Or, you know, football players, you know, we're always talking about these ridiculous amounts of money that you know, transfers for hundreds of millions. And people say, ah, well, the player, he's a good player, but he's not worth that much money. And this is a subjective opinion. It's your evaluation of that property or that sports person, whether you think they're worth the salary or the amount somebody pays for them. But finally, the answer to that very often is, well, if somebody's willing to pay it, then they're worth it. So, you know, if somebody bought the house for that price, so if somebody can pay £2 or £3 million or £5 million for a small apartment in the center of London, now I would say it's not worth it. To me, that's ridiculous. And even if I had the money, I don't think I would pay it. Although who knows? Because, you know, I don't have the money, so I'm never going to have to deal with that question. But obviously there are people who have that money who they think it is worth it to have an apartment in central London for many reasons.
Absolutely.
So, you know, to them it's worth it. So you say, well, if someone's prepared to pay it, then it's worth it.
Absolutely.
So the sort of an objective value of things determined by the market, if you like.
Yeah.
What people are prepared to pay for things based on supply and demand. And then obviously people's opinion, your personal evaluation, whether you think it's worth it. Would I pay that for that property? No way. Or for that car or whatever it may be. No, I don't think it's worth it. So you can use worth in both senses, no? The value of something objectively in the market and your personal opinion.
Yeah, your subjective opinion. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. And I think there was another example where we should kind of like the opposite end of the spectrum, let's say, where we're talking about obviously London, where there's a high demand. And then in many northern areas that were previously sort of very industrial, there's kind of a surplus of housing, which is another interesting word, right? There's a surplus of housing. And many years ago, including a program that I watched, it was very clear that the balance between supply and demand was completely different in the north of the UK. And therefore, because the supply was basically absolutely loads of supply of housing, no problem at all, you could basically buy a house for £1 because the market was so uneven, let's say, that there was literally nobody who was interested in any of these houses because there was no employment, right?
Yeah.
So, it's kind of
a housing surplus. Yeah, so supply is an abundance, if you like. There's too much of something and more of the thing available than there is demand for it.
Exactly, right.
And that's why the price is low. Now, £1, I think, was a very extreme case in this particular program. Yeah, you know, I bought a house in the north of England, my only house I bought in England, where I went to university in the northeast of England, and it cost more than £1, even in the late 80s.
Oh, no, absolutely. This was an absolutely extreme case.
Although still incredibly cheap. If I told you, I'll tell you, I bought a 3-bedroom, a small terraced house with a garden.
Okay.
And I think it cost me in 1989, maybe, £26,000. Now, today, even in that same city, it would cost you four or five times more.
Yeah,
but in London, you couldn't buy, I don't know, a toilet for 26,000. Well, maybe a toilet, but not much more. you're talking about millions, really.
It reminds me of an expression, because we'll come on to the whole idea of universities and everything. But one year, I was studying in Nottingham, actually, and we were driving down to London, and kind of like the people on my course, they kind of had a negative impression about London, and they were thinking about all these different expressions related to London, and there's this one in particular, which is that the streets are paved with gold, right?
Yeah.
So there's kind of this perception that, you know, everything's basically not really, you know, it doesn't give you any value for money, and it's like everything's excessively expensive, right?
Expensive.
Yeah, and so there's definitely the impression that I got from some of the people. They kind of were not fans of London.
Well, people from the north like me, we often, you know, we don't particularly like. Well, it's the same in every country.
Yes, absolutely.
The capital city or the people from the capital are often not popular with the rest of the. I think
that's
in France, nobody likes Parisians.
No, that's true. That's true.
Or Paris.
I think that's, yes,
and in UK. Outside London, and particularly maybe the north, but other parts of the UK too that are not London, we tend to have, you know, sort of, should we say, negative ideas about Londoners and London. We say, oh, it's so expensive, and oh, a pint of beer costs this. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
How can anyone live there? It's a great place to visit, maybe as a tourist, but to live on. It's so busy and people running around and nobody has any time. Well, what people in Spain say about Madrid, sort of similar, really.
Yeah,
so I think it's a capital city syndrome thing.
Yeah, for sure.
That occurs everywhere now. But
Well,
but anyway. I think going back to my house that costs so little, but in that time, probably the equivalent sized property in an equivalent sort of neighborhood in London would have cost, and I'm just guessing here, but at least £100,000. No, probably more.
Yeah.
So, you know, four times more, minimum.
Yeah, minimum. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So that just gives, you know, that, obviously, prices have increased in both places with inflation, of course, in 30 something years since then.
Mm.
But, you know, the relative difference is probably the same, or maybe London, or maybe even more. London might have got even more expensive relative to other parts of the UK. But there's a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. So, that's what we're talking about, surplus, supply and demand. Obviously, that key issue with oferta, be careful with that. Remember, it's supply, not offer. And of course, the whole idea of surplus, which is where suddenly you have a lot of supply and therefore the price goes down.
And we should mention the opposite of a surplus.
Oh, absolutely.
The problem in the southeast of England, or particularly London, is a shortage.
Mm.
So where you don't have enough housing in this particular example or whatever it may be, there's a shortage. There isn't enough. So obviously then you have high demand for something and there isn't enough of it to meet the demand. We say to meet demand.
Mm.
And therefore the price goes up. And that's a basic law of economics that I learned at school. No?
Yeah.
The law of supply and demand, it's called.
Yeah, yeah. I did like that. I mean, as you said before recording, it's kind of basic A-level economics, but I did like economics as a subject. It was like very interesting in seeing how that works, right? But good. And then after this, now we've got this other word, which is worthwhile, right? Worthwhile. Yeah. Now let's discuss that a little bit before we go on to worthy, which is like, again, different. So
Worthwhile. Well, it's a word you can use instead of worth it. Mm. So for example, you say, you know, I don't think this house is worth it. What's it? It, the money that somebody's asking for it, the price of the house. Mm. But you say, it's not worthwhile paying X amount for this house. Mm. So it means the same, but you have to use it slightly different way. You don't need the it with worthwhile. Something is worthwhile doing. So it could be an activity. It doesn't have to be the cost of something. It's worthwhile doing this because you get a benefit from it, which is greater than the effort or cost, if you're talking about money, involved. So it's like a sort of cost-benefit analysis, you could say, which comes into business. You know, you know, a company considering whether to pay to buy another company, have to look at the cost of what it costs you to do that and what are the rewards, benefits, profits that you will get. And therefore, you know, it's a comparison, though. So is it worth it? So is it worthwhile buying this smaller company for our business?
Yeah, I guess the main difference here is that you would always use it with a verb, right? Worthwhile studying or worthwhile investing, whereas something like is worth it. Is it worth it? You can, like, you know, it's just related. Is that car worth it? You know,
Worth the money that someone's asking for it. Yes, I mean, you can use worthwhile in this without the verb if it's understood what you're talking about. So in your conversation, we've already talked about studying a particular subject at university, medicine, for example. So someone's talking about that. Is it worth it? You can say, well, I think it's worthwhile. I think it's a worthwhile subject to study. So you could just use worthwhile because you know we're talking about studying a particular subject. But very often we use it with the verb. Now, is it worthwhile studying medicine? Because, you know, it takes, what, 6-7 years or something ridiculous? You know, are the rewards, not only in terms of financially, money, but, you know, job satisfaction, et cetera, et cetera. You know, is it worth it? Is it worth studying? Or is studying, you could say, is studying medicine worthwhile? You can put the worthwhile at the end after the verb.
Yeah.
And that's an opinion, no? It's a subject. Yeah, I think it is. Or no, I don't think it is. 7 years studying? No way. It's too much effort, no, or too much time.
But I think it is a good way of thinking about the difference in there. It's like most of the time when you're thinking about worthwhile, you probably will have to connect it to a verb of some kind. Okay. Because like now, just the example that we're talking about now, right, is going to be like, was it worthwhile studying, you know, studying in a particular subject? Was it worthwhile, you know, or not, you know, or was it worthwhile traveling to the United States or whatever it might be?
You know? Yeah. So, when you talk about holidays, trips, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's true. You can't use it just for the price of something.
No. So exactly.
If it's just a car that costs, I don't know, 50,000 euros.
Yeah.
And you could say, really? Do you think it's worth it? Meaning worth 50, but you can't say, is that car worthwhile?
No, you can't.
No,
you
worthwhile can't. Is more to do with the use of something, no?
That's right.
Or doing something, an activity, that's which could have an economic connection.
Of course.
So obviously if you study medicine, when you say, is it worthwhile? You're looking at every aspect of that, you know, becoming a doctor, the prestige of being a doctor, you know, the job satisfaction, you're helping people. And obviously maybe you get a very good salary. Or not, it depends. So, you know, it's a combination of things.
Absolutely.
You can't just use it simply to talk about the price. Then you'd say, is it worth it?
Exactly. So
you are right. You've really got to have some concept of a verb, of an action.
That's right.
Like studying something, for example, or doing something.
Yeah. And so if we could actually use that example so that people can kind of get a better idea, my question to you would be, when you were studying, Alistair, do you think that it was worthwhile studying the subject that you decided to study?
Good question. Well, I studied politics. So not the most useful of, if you're purely thinking of career prospects and getting very good jobs with high salaries, then obviously politics is not really the best thing to study. It's not like medicine, perhaps, or law or engineering.
Sure.
It has no obvious end product. Mm. You know, what job do you get with politics?
Yeah.
My grandmother always said, oh, you're going to be a politician. Maybe you'll be prime minister one day. And I was trying to explain that studying politics as a subject university academic had nothing to do with politics, really,
right,
or becoming a politician.
Okay.
But anyway, she never quite grasped that idea.
Right.
So yeah, was it worthwhile? Well, not in terms of career. What was the expression we've used before in previous
aspirations,
episodes?
I suppose.
Well, career aspirations and climbing the
corporate ladder. Yeah.
Then absolutely not. Yeah. And I've never actually used my degree. Never mind being politics. My degree in general. I've only had two jobs in my life. The one I had in UK and now teaching or coaching English. Mm. And in neither of them, I actually needed any degree, and definitely not a politics degree. So in that sense, it hasn't been worthwhile in terms of my career or financially or in any career capacity. No. However, I would say, yes, it was worthwhile for the experience of just going to university and having an amazing time, that you grow as an individual and you mature and you learn to be independent. Because I left home, as you did, I think, as most people in the UK.
Yeah, this I left is home at eight.
Very different culturally to Spain and I think most
very
other countries.
Yeah,
so almost everyone leaves home at 18.
Yeah.
And studies in a university in a different city from where you live. We won't go into why, because it's a very long, complicated. I'm not quite sure why, really. It's a mixture of different things.
It is.
But anyway,
yeah.
So I left at 18, went to another city. I had a university where I lived, three universities, I think, now Liverpool has. Never, ever considered going to any of them. Never entered my mind. So to me,
right.
I was always going to leave home and study somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just academic. It's like becoming independent from your parents, learning to look after yourself, to cook, to clean, manage your money. Well, become an adult, basically.
That's
so to me, the whole experience of university, irrespective of what I actually studied, was worthwhile. And also, I enjoyed politics. It was a very interesting subject and I enjoyed it.
Well, that's
so from that point of view,
yeah.
It was worthwhile. Financially,
absolutely.
And from a career point of view, no, not really.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. I think, I studied, kind of similar in from my point of view, although I did actually put it into practice, let's say. I mean, when I studied urban planning, which in Spanish is basically urbanismo, I did actually get my first few jobs related to that subject. So I did use my CV. I did use my degree a little bit.
So it was worthwhile.
At least at that point.
Because you got a job based on that degree.
Absolutely. But it was worthwhile for everything else as well that you mentioned in terms of kind of looking after
experience.
Yourself. Absolutely. So that was actually probably more worthwhile than the actual subject itself.
Yeah, the piece of paper at the end.
That's right. Absolutely. And later on, then I didn't continue with that particular career path.
Career path.
Good expression, career path. Yeah. And I decided to, come to Spain and teach English and
So neither of us in the end, our careers are based on what we studied.
No, not at all. But I would
say
that.
Well, you at the beginning briefly.
But I would say probably it did, those experiences did help us take even our English to a next level. I don't know whether it was about the same feeling that you had when you were doing your degree.
Well,
I certainly felt communication skills and
how to study, how to process information. Yeah, it teaches a lot of skills, university.
Does, absolutely.
Whatever subject you study, really. So it's true. Ability to write, express yourself, communicate, research subject. You have to go to the library, research
A lot of reading,
Reading. Yeah. So yeah, it teaches all kinds and life skills when you leave home, which we both did.
Absolutely.
For me, going to university was an amazing experience. I don't regret at all, even though, purely from a career point of view, it's never helped me in any way. Directly. Indirectly, yes, for the reasons you say, no. But an amazing experience that was completely worthwhile.
Absolutely. Good. So there you go. We've done worthwhile. Now let's get on to the actual
word we started with.
Yes, that's right. Which is worthy. So we start, something is worth it. So maybe an object or something in particular. Is that car worth it? Is buying a house in London worth it? Then we have, is it something worthwhile? And
like doing something like studying at university now, for example.
Exactly right. And then after that, you have a worthy, right?
Yeah. So worthy. What's the difference? This is the question. Why can't in this sentence that the person used that your advice is always worthy? Now, your advice is worthwhile, I'm sure, definitely. Like going to university is worthwhile in the end. You know, the it has a benefit, you know, that you ascend and say, yeah, it's good. Or useful. I think the best word here is probably useful, but maybe we'll go into that at the end. But not worthy. So worthy is it has a different meaning. It's like that you deserve something, lo mereces. So it's to do with merecer. It's not to do with the value of something. So, you know, people can be worthy of your respect or your praise. Praise is elogios, no?
Yes.
Or your love, you know?
That's
just
right.
To give three examples. So it's not usually connected with money in this sense, you know? So somebody is worthy of your respect or worthy of your praise. They merecer, they deserve the amount of respect or praise or love that you give to them.
That's right.
Because they deserve it. They've earned it, we can say, you know, lo han ganado, they've earned it.
Yeah.
And you can apply that in many situations, in personal relationships, or about many, many things, no? So obviously the sentence about your advice, there's no concept of, you know, advice can't be deserving of anything because it's a thing, no? It doesn't make any sense to use that word with the sense of deserving with advice. No?
So that's the key difference. Like, as you said, like, you're worthy of something, but it's the way this particular person constructed the phrase, it just didn't work in that particular sentence at all, did it?
No, because it doesn't make sense.
No,
but it's understandable, the mistake, because they're probably just thinking worthy means the value of something is.
That's right. Or this, you know, as we were talking before we recorded, right? The whole idea of something being worth it is like, reading your advice is definitely worth it. It's worth my time, right?
Yeah, there has to be something that you have to do, some kind of effort. Mm. So if it's not money, so this is the thing, that your advice is free. So therefore there's no cost. So there's no point talking about, is it worth it? Is it worth the money? Because there's no money. There's no financial transaction takes place. Now, it's also not a great deal of effort. All they have to do really is open an email and read it on a Friday, no? Your Friday emails.
Yeah.
But you could say their time. So if it takes them, I don't know, 5 minutes, 2 minutes to read your email, is it worth it? Is it worthwhile reading your email? Mm. Well, I'd say this person obviously thinks so, because she's saying your advice is great, no?
Yeah.
So it's definitely worthwhile reading the email. The time that it takes is very little, and the benefit you receive, the reward, the compensation is much greater. For this person, I hope for all the people who receive your emails.
Yeah.
But worthy, there's no sense. I think the only sense of worthy would be if this person continued with their email saying all these wonderful things about you, Daniel, which I'm sure they probably did, say, oh, you're fantastic and your emails are wonderful. So they're praising you, giving you a lot of elogios, no? Alabanzas, I think is another word you can use in Spanish. Saying very nice things about you and your emails.
Yeah.
Now, I could say, oh, Daniel, are you really worthy of such praise? No, I would never doubt that you are. So it's, of course you are. So, you know, it would be someone else questioning whether the amount of praise you're receiving from this particular individual is OTT, over the top, which is an expression I think we have mentioned. So it's like too much, too exaggerated. You go, okay, your emails are good. But that good, really, for this person to be saying you're amazing and fantastic? Mm. And this, of course, is a very subjective opinion.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a really good way of explaining it. Absolutely. And I think the word praise in itself is another one that's probably worth focusing on there just a little bit, because you mentioned it very quickly there. But it's one of those words that I think that if I said it quickly to most Spanish speakers, they don't really get hold of it very, very well. I don't know why. I think it's maybe partly because I've never heard these Spanish words that are equivalent to praise being used very much. And that's maybe one reason why most people are not looking for that translation of those words, because they're not used very much.
But maybe
praise
we use
is
it
really
a lot,
important,
don't we, in
isn't it? We use, especially if you're kind of like a manager of a team or something like that, you know, you want to get the most out of your team. Then a big part of that is like praising them when they're doing something right. Right.
To give praise is very important as a teacher, coach, you need to, you know, you're, well, it's always a debate, isn't it, in sort of teaching professional about how much praise,
the
or as a parent,
or the stick.
How much praise should you give to people for doing something good? You want to get the balance right. Enough praise, but not too much.
Yeah.
If they get too much, it might make them, you know,
big-headed.
Exactly. So they have very high opinion of themselves. No,
that's right. That's
think
right.
They're wonderful, and this is not healthy. The same being that you're a father with your children, no? There's a balance between praising them when they do things well, when they behave well, when they get good marks at school.
Yeah.
But maybe not too much. You know, there's a balance. You've got to find the right balance.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's not easy, I think, you know. So praise is good because it encourages people to work harder or make a bigger effort or continue to behave well in the case of your children. But on the other hand, do you want to praise them too much?
Probably not. Because that's probably not. Too much in itself would be probably not good.
Too much praise is not necessarily a good thing. Yeah, so it's finding that equilibrium, that balance. No?
And the funny thing here is that in many cases, Spanish speakers get very confused between the word praise and the word to pray.
I was just thinking that exactly. You read my great minds think alike. That's a good expression. I was just about to say that, yeah, I think a lot of time people confuse it with to pray. Well, you can say praise the Lord.
Oh, that's true as well.
So when you're praising the Lord, you're sort of saying, God, you are wonderful and fantastic. And that's what you're doing. No, really, when you pray to God and you say, God, you are all powerful, almighty, wonderful God. Mm-hmm. So you're praising God. Mm. But yeah, people confuse that with praying to God,
which is
asking God for something. No.
Yeah.
So they are connected in that sense, but it's two different words with two different meanings. Yeah, I think because they're so similar, no? Praise and to pray.
Yeah, but you have to be because I mean clearly, you know, praying is very much related to religious activity, right? But praise is absolutely a business activity, you know. Yeah. So I mean, or obviously some sort of educational activity or whatever it might be, right? But it can be used absolutely in lots of different contexts, whereas praying cannot. Praying is
very specific
to going to the church or whatever.
Yeah, you know,
whatever
to go to church to pray.
Yeah.
Praise is important in business, in work. So if our listeners are sort of in managerial positions and they have responsibilities, they have a team of people, then obviously it's important to pray, you know, when it's appropriate and to the right, to the correct degree, to praise them. Because people like to be praised. They like
Absolutely.
To get positive feedback about their work, you know, and
they
feel good about themselves if they receive praise from their boss or their manager.
Yeah.
And that encourages them to keep working hard and work well. No, because if you never praise them, you never say anything positive, you know, it's doesn't really, I don't know, doesn't encourage them to work hard, no, or to make an effort.
Yeah. And going back to our main point then, so if we talk about the whole idea of praise and praising your team, if you do praise your team, then they kind of feel worthy of, you know, that's the whole point, isn't it? They feel worthy. Maybe they feel worthy of, I don't know.
Well, of that praise, no? Of
absolutely.
Positive comments.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so, because they feel that they deserve it.
Absolutely.
That they meritere. No, they deserve that praise because they know they've worked very hard and they've achieved excellent results.
Yeah.
So they feel they deserve the praise they're receiving. So, you know, it's a two-way process between the manager and the team. No?
So it's interesting that. I mean, there you have it basically, really. So it's kind of interesting that one little mistake in that email kind of made us think, well, yeah, this whole idea of something being worth it is interesting. We've covered that. But then we've got these other little ways of using worth in different ways, right? We have worthwhile, where it's often connected to a verb, you know, worthwhile studying, worthwhile traveling, worthwhile doing something, right? Mm-hmm. And then the whole idea of being worthy, right? Which are all slightly different and used in slightly different situations, right?
Yeah, you're worthy of something, or sort of something you're receiving from another person.
Exactly.
Like praise, respect, love.
Yes, yes.
And whether you deserve that amount of those things or not, which is a very subjective opinion.
Yeah. So it's kind of, in many ways, worthy is when you're kind of backing up the action of somebody else that you've seen doing something. So imagine that I see my boss praising a colleague of mine, and that my colleague turns around to me and says, oh, that was nice. And I say, well, you're definitely worthy of that praise, right?
Yeah. I think you deserve it. You've done a good job. Or I might not. I might think, I think that's a bit exaggerated, that amount of praise.
Sure.
It didn't do that much, really.
Sure. Yeah, it could be positive or negative. You know, you can use it in the positive or negative form, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah. Good. Alistair, fantastic. Really like that. Really very interesting, very economic episode, but really, really very interesting. Covered a load of stuff. So thank you very much for your time. And I will see you
again. Thank you to the person who sent the email.
Well, absolutely.
From that little mistake, we've got a whole episode of a podcast.
Absolutely. Fantastic. All right. Great, Alistair. We'll see you again next week. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, a pleasure as always.
All right. See you then. Bye-bye.